So I'd invite you today, in those times when we're not formally meditating, but we're, you know, engaged in, maybe I'm talking or we're doing some other activity, to see if you can stay as grounded as you can in the body, just remembering, you know, that you can come back to the body at any time, come back to the breath. It's particularly easy for us to get caught up in our heads, as we know. And so just having remembering that possibility of kind of, okay, I can kind of untangle myself from my thinking, from thoughts, and then just come back. We'll still be aware, we'll still be thinking, we'll still be able to use those faculties, but we're not so kind of caught up in it in a one-dimensional kind of way in thinking. And just being able to come back to the body. So in this next period, what I'd like to do is just to kind of lay out the kind of a lay version of the science of habits and habit change and why habits can be difficult to change, and just kind of reinforce what I said earlier about how much of our many of our stresses and sufferings in life come from habits, are rooted in habits that have developed over time. And that things that we do over and over can get us into trouble. There's a saying that goes back to the 19th century from Samuel Smiles. You might have heard this. He said, "Sow a thought, reap an act. Sow an act, reap a habit. Sow a habit, reap a character. Sow a character, reap a destiny." You know, just that kind of the how our thoughts, when we repeat them, easily turn into acts. And when we repeat the acts, they become habitual. That repetition leads to habits. And once behaviors become habitual, we think, well, this is who I am. You know, I always get angry when I'm, you know, in this situation, or I'm always procrastinating. We think that's essentially who we are because we've done it so often. You know, it's become our sense of, oh, this is me. But really, at a deeper level, I mean, what's actually happened is we have cultivated those patterns, those habits by repetition. You know, in the first place, there may have been a good reason to do something. We want to get some kind of a reward or, you know, some kind of comfort or security from a behavior. But then once we repeat it over and over, it may not serve us. You know, it may be that certain responses at a certain time in our life might have been the best thing we could do under the circumstances. You know, you could think of a young child who's not getting the love and the care they need from their parents or their caregivers, who feels, oh, I'm going to take care of myself, and starts eating, for example, using food as a comfort. And you can see how for that small child, that might be a very functional response, you know, very, you know, in a sense, kind of have a wisdom to it. And yet, if that then becomes the pattern of, like, every time I feel that, you know, that sense of aloneness, or I feel, you know, lack of affection, lack of connection, that's where I go as my default, then what I tend to do is I create that pattern, you know, as a way of being, and it becomes habitual, and it, after a while, it becomes kind of my sense of who I am. Well, this is what I do. I can't think of doing things really any differently because this is what I've always done. I mean, that's not the case with every habit, but with some of them, there's, you know, that are deep rooted, and they can have a good reason in the beginning, but once they're set in motion, they can often be harmful and unhealthy for us. And so I'm focusing really today mainly on habits that get established that aren't helpful to us. You know, there's many things in our lives that are habitual in nature that we really don't need to change. that seem like, yeah, I don't need to spend a lot of time deciding whether I want to put my seatbelt on when I get in my car, you know, as opposed to just kind of, I get in, close the door, I do it. I've done it 1,000 times or 10,000 times. So, you know, that's what I do. I'll brush my teeth, you know, before I go to bed, you know, many other things that are healthy, you know. So what I'm going to be focusing on, obviously, today is the habits that don't serve us, that are unhelpful or unhealthy, on one side, but also to developing ones that are healthy and that are helpful to us. So abandoning those that don't serve us, don't help us, and cultivating and developing those that do. So just to say, as I was saying earlier, you know, much of our suffering comes from behaviors that have become habitual. And we know, you know, just naming a few, you know, getting angry or impatient, getting distracted, caught up in electronic devices, procrastinating, judging ourselves, judging others, eating or drinking in unhealthy ways. You know, many different expressions, you know, that habits can take. But the main point is that anything can become habitual, any behavior can become habitual if it's repeated often enough. So habits essentially form through repetition under consistent conditions. So take an example. Let's say I'm sitting at home on my own in the evening, and you know, because of circumstances, maybe a relationship has come to an end, and maybe I'm feeling lonely or I'm feeling sad, just hypothetically a situation like that. And then I think, I'd like to feel better. I may not even think this consciously. It may be actually happening much more subconsciously. But, oh, I've got some ice cream in the freezer. You know, and I kind of say, oh, yeah, I've got some, you know, Cherry Garcia or whatever. And so I go, get a bowl of ice cream, and then I eat the bowl of ice cream. And there's a sense of getting some comfort from that. And that feels nice. I don't feel quite so sad or so lonely or whatever. Okay, so I do that once, no big deal. But then maybe the next night or a couple of nights later, I have that same feeling again. You know, once something's been done even once or twice, there's kind of a little bit more of a likelihood, you know, that the brain kind of goes, oh, yeah, I remember this, from the last time. So I feel that, and then it's a little bit easier to go, you know, to feel, oh, yeah, oh, okay, I'll have some ice cream. So I do that again. Well, at a certain point, and it, you know, there's no science that I'm aware of that says it's by this date or this number of times. It obviously depends on the kind of habit, it depends on the person, you know. But the main point being, though, that with enough repetition, anything can become habitual. And so in this situation, what happens is at a certain point, that action, that trigger of the loneliness or the sadness leading to the action and the outcome of the action, the result, the kind of good feeling, becomes automatic. It doesn't have to be intentional anymore. It's set in motion by the context, by the situation. And that would normally be, you know, sitting at home at night, you know, it'd be the place, maybe the time of day, you know, 10 or 11 o'clock in the evening. And the feeling, you know, that feeling of, you know, anxiety or loneliness or sadness or whatever it is. And that context will then be the trigger. So what's happened is that what originally was intentional has now become automatic through repetition at a certain point. You know, and this goes for healthy habits and also unhealthy ones. The habits are really located, the processes are located mainly in the oldest part of the brain. And the brain doesn't make a kind of a moral distinction. I think of it sometimes as the brain can just as easily, I don't mean easily necessarily, and direct comparison, but the brain can equally, let's say, make a habit out of eating fresh fruit and vegetables or taking heroin. You know, I mean, it's like both of them become habitual, but one is a much more healthy and beneficial, you know, thing, the fruit and vegetables, and the other is unhealthy. The brain isn't, the kind of the part of the brain that's involved in habit formation isn't saying, you know, oh, this is good and this is bad. It's a different part of the brain that's involved in that. But then in order to involve the more advanced brain, we've actually have to bring the habit into awareness. So that, but that automatic process of brain process isn't, you know, isn't really involved in the moral equation of like, oh, this is good and this is bad. It's really much more primal, much more basic processes involved. So once I repeat that action often enough, it becomes habitual. Here's what William James said, the great psychologist, said a century and a quarter ago. He said, any sequence of mental action which has been frequently repeated tends to perpetuate itself. Any sequence of mental action which has been frequently repeated tends to perpetuate itself, so that we find ourselves automatically prompted to think, feel, or do what we have been before accustomed to think, feel, or do under like circumstances, without any consciously formed purpose or anticipation of results. So the repetition of any behavior, you know, anything we do often enough becomes automatic. Anything we think, we find ourselves, you know, any sequence of mental action that's been frequently repeated tends to perpetuate itself, so that we do it automatically, so that we find ourselves automatically prompted to think, feel, or do what we've before been accustomed to think, feel, or do under like circumstances, without any consciously formed purpose or anticipation of results. So what he's saying here is habits are taken out of the intentional realm and become automatic. They come automatic. And there's an evolutionary basis for habits. You know, you think about it, how if everything we do, everything we did had to be thought through, we'd have to have these huge brains. And it wouldn't really be helpful for us. I mean, wouldn't be helpful for us as a species. And, you know, we'd have to, you know, be, you know, every time we got in a car, we'd have to, now, how do I drive a car? How do I ride a bicycle? You know, I mean, the fact is, once we get that process going, the brain says, oh, yeah, I know how to do this. This is what I do when I get on the bike, for example. And this is how the balance, you know, I don't have to think, oh, do I go this way? Do I go this way to keep my balance? It's like there's that internal kind of understanding of it. Some of you may be familiar with a book by Charles Duhigg called The Power of Habit. It's an excellent book on, particularly on the science of habits and habit formation. But he talks about this evolutionary basis for habit, you know, for the development of habits, why humans develop habits. And he explains it this way. He says, an efficient brain, about, you know, why our brains make certain actions and processes, thought processes as well, make them habitual. He says it's on the basis of efficiency. It's to make things simpler so that we don't, you know, things aren't complex and we don't have to relearn things over and over again. And he says an efficient brain requires less room, which makes for a smaller head, which makes childbirth easier and therefore causes fewer infant and mother deaths. An efficient brain also allows us to stop thinking constantly about basic behaviors such as walking and choosing what to eat, so we can devote mental energy to inventing spears, irrigation systems, and eventually airplanes and video games. So the fact that this efficiency takes certain things off of the, you know, out of the realm of, you know, I don't need to put the energy into thinking about those things. So now there's more space opened up for creativity and invention and all of those things, as he says in a kind of humorous way. Now, so this is kind of, you can think of it as a pretty impersonal process, you know, repetition over time, the action or the thought process becomes automatic, you know, just through that repetition over time. Once they're established, what happens is habits are assigned, as it were, to instinctual, faster acting brain processes and become automatic rather than being governed by intention. So there's a different brain processes involved in intentional activity, you know, involving the more advanced brain, the prefrontal cortex, whereas habits are the older, more instinctual brain. Some of you may be familiar with the book, Daniel Kahneman's book, Thinking Fast and Slow. You know, he talks about the research he's done over many decades of why we humans do things quite often that aren't actually in our own interests. You know, what are the brain processes involved in that? But that's kind of a separate thing. But here he says, you know, in relation to habits, he says, he talks about two modes of cognitive function. One, he says, is an intuitive mode. He calls this system one, in which judgments and decisions are made automatically and rapidly. And a controlled mode, he calls system two, which is deliberate and slower. So there's the automatic mode and the slower, more more deliberate and controlled mode. And I think of this just as an image, for example, in taking an image of an example of somebody walking through the woods and, you know, maybe walking down a path that's unfamiliar and then seeing something on the path up ahead that's kind of thick and curly, you know. And what can happen is that, I mean, what may well happen if the perception is that's a snake, then what happens is we'll go automatically into a kind of habitual and fight or flight mode. You know, fear gets engaged of like, oh, you know, I've got to defend myself. You know, I'm not thinking that rationally, but it's happening automatically. We go into that mode. And that will happen in an immediate way, but then, you know, you stop, you'll kind of get vigilant, look at what's there, but then maybe you see, oh, it's not moving, and it's actually linked, you know, close to that tree there, and then you see, oh, actually it's a tree branch, it's not a snake, it's a tree branch. But for that process to get engaged, it's a slower one. You know, the kind of that assessment happens after and more slowly than that immediate response. And so what's going on with habits is that it's activating that immediate response, and intentions rely on that slower moving, more advanced brain that developed later, the prefrontal cortex, where we get into deliberation, rational thinking, like assessment. And so if you think about it, when they come into conflict with each other, the faster acting process tends to win out. So you think about, you know, having a habit that you want to give up. You know, let's say, you know, if you were a smoker and you had a New Year's resolution, I want to give up smoking. You might have a very strong intention of like, I really want to do this. This isn't healthy for me. And you know it's not healthy. And yet, when push comes to shove, you know, when there's that feeling, you're like, okay, I'm going to give up smoking. When that urge comes up of like that desire, that wanting, then it tends to be much more immediate than the more kind of slower acting, more intentional process. And so when they come into conflict, you know, Kahneman points out when they come into conflict, then the faster acting processes tend to win out. Another researcher on habits says, habits yield tunnel vision, thus reducing the effectiveness of interventions aimed at changing behavior through conscious deliberation. So it's like we get into that fight or flight mode. We're just looking at the thing that you know, has that urgency to it. You know, it could be a response of defending ourselves, getting angry or impatient, or it could be the feeling of wanting something, of moving towards something, and kind of getting focused in on it. So when the faster acting brain processes come in conflict with the more intentional, slower processes, then typically the faster acting processes tend to win out. And so so this is why, you know, in a simple, you know, kind of simplified way, why habits can be hard to change. That we, you know, why is it that it's so hard for, you know, to carry out our New Year's resolutions? Why is it so easy for us to kind of have good intentions, but then they fall by the wayside? As I'll talk about a little bit later, we really, our intentions need to be very strong and very focused in order to be able to work with these, you know, and to respond to these very, you know, much more faster acting brain processes. I think of it as like an old-fashioned, you know, Model T Ford racing against a Ferrari or a Maserati or something. You know, the fast acting processes, the Ferrari is at the finish line before the old Ford is even left the starting gate. You know, that's how it can be with habits. So all of this is really to say that we need to, in order to transform habits, we need to bring them into awareness. We need to cultivate intention, you know, a strong intention to make change. And we need to cultivate the qualities of awareness that can then open us up to making healthier choices, more beneficial choices. So I don't want to get too much more into the kind of the understanding, but just to kind of give that as an overall framework. And I want to say one more thing that I found helpful in exploring habits and working with habits is to focus less on the habit itself, whether it's eating or drinking or you know, spending too much time online or procrastinating. Not so much looking at the habit itself, but looking more at the underlying energy that motivates the habit. So so what I've done is identified four main types of unhealthy habits based on the underlying energies of them. And I think they can be helpful for in terms of thinking about habits. The first is habits of wanting. you know, where the energy is like we're reaching out for something. And it could be food, or it could be drink, or it could be shopping, or it could be sex, or could be anything. But the energy is that outward going energy. And it's a kind of contracting, getting into tunnel vision around the thing that we want. You know, so we kind of contract around that. The second is habits of resistance, where we're wanting to push away something that we find unpleasant. So that's the energy of like pushing away, of getting rid of something. So it could manifest as getting impatient or angry or frustrated or judgmental. It's like, but that's the energy. You know, it's like, oh, I don't want this. I've got to get away from this. I'm not going to be happy as long as this is here, this person, this thing, this situation. The other is kind of that pulling towards us. A third is when we kind of get disconnected. I call these habits of distraction, where, for example, we're checking out. We're spending a lot of time online or on social media, on the cell phone or watching TV. There's something about the present moment that we're avoiding, and that's our way of avoiding, you know. And it could manifest in different ways, but it has that energy of going out into kind of distraction. And the fourth energy really is habits of doing, you know, where we get caught up in, we're always on our way somewhere, we're stressed, we're anxious, we're frenetic. We're disconnected from the present moment. We're kind of, it's almost like we're on a treadmill. You know, we're not so much, you know, deliberating. We're not so much choosing, and we're not so much present. We're kind of like, I've got to get through this in order to do this, in order to do this. And the mind is kind of in the future. The mind's ahead of us. And we're not really, you know, if we checked in, might notice, oh, I'm really tight and I'm really tense. But a lot of the time we're not even aware of that because we're so much in that mode. What all of these energies really have in common is we're not present for our experience. If we're moving towards something, the mind is going, you know, towards that thing that we're wanting. If we're pushing away, we're not staying with our experience. We're trying to separate ourselves from it. If we're distracting, you know, we're checking out, we're getting distracted, we're moving away from something. There's something that we're wanting to avoid and not open to, not be with. Similarly, with the doing, the energy is we're leaning into the future. We're not aware of our experience. So all of these habits, well, however they manifest, whether, you know, it's food or drink or internet or procrastination or judgment or whatever it is, whatever the behaviors, whatever the patterns of thinking, there's what we're doing is we're not present with our experience. So the antidote to those patterns really is to keep coming back, is to come back to the present moment, come back to our direct experience. And this is where mindfulness comes in. This is where why mindfulness really is essential to transform habits. So what I'll do in a few minutes, maybe we'll take a few minutes of break, but maybe before that, I just want to check in if there's anything coming up for you. And we're going to move more in, you know, after we've taken a break, into kind of the experiential and exploring habits in our own lives. But I wanted to at least give a kind of an overview of what's going on for us in habit formation and why habits can be hard to change. So let's just take a few minutes if anyone has anything that you'd like to share, or any questions or any concerns, please feel free. Yes, please. Then.
Examples of the busyness one, how that manifests itself.
Yeah, I mean, the energy of, you know, it's one I'm familiar with myself, and it can be, you know, broadly it can be, you know, being stressed out, being anxious, feeling we've got too much to do, checking things off, you know, our to-do list. And essentially what it is, you know, patterns of thought and sensation that that leave us feeling, not leave us feeling, that really tie us into a kind of a way of being with our experience where we're not present because there's a belief that something's going to go wrong. You know, there's, if I don't get this, all of this done, then something bad is going to happen. It's a, I see it as basically being a fear-based response. Underlying, there's a kind of in the mind, there's some sense that something bad is going to happen if I don't do this. So I need to get through this next thing in order to, so that won't fail, so I won't, you know, things won't fall apart here, and then I can get on to the next one. And so there's the sense of always moving on to the next thing and not really being present for our experience. And the antidote is to just, can I come back to this feeling, this experience? What am I feeling right now? And then we can kind of untangle ourselves. It's, I think of it as a kind of a narrative in the mind that's driving us along. You know, that sense of, you know, things are going to go wrong. You know, I'm going to fail. You know, bad things are going to happen. Some underlying story about ourselves and our lives, grounded in fear and worry. And then, so the way we respond to that is, often is to just really keep, you know, get into the tunnel vision thing and keep, you know, keep holding on tight so that we can do it, so that we don't, the bad things don't happen. Anyone experience any of that in your life? Yeah, I mean, it's, I think it's a pretty common thing in our kind of modern world, modern life. But does that make sense? Thank you, Lydia. Yes, please.
How meditation can help people with ADD?
Yeah, with ADD.
Do you think it's helpful to do meditation for?
Yeah, I've seen some studies on ADD, ADHD, and meditation that meditation is helpful. But basically, the way that meditation can be helpful is just training the mind to come back and be present, you know, for our experience here and now. If, you know, if the mind is kind of moving off, you know, hard to focus, going off, hard to pay attention, then the training of the mind just to keep coming back, being present with the breath or the body or direct experience, is a way of training the mind to move out of distraction. And, you know, as I've used that term, a kind of building the muscle of attention, strengthening that capacity to pay attention. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, so question I have is for the different categories of habits you name, do you see them playing off of each other? And then how do you think about focusing? Because you can get overwhelmed just trying to focus on all of them,
yeah.
Right? So
yeah.
So how do you think about focusing? Start with one, kind of go from there?
Yeah. I don't mean to suggest, first of all, that they're neat categories and it's always, you know, always comes within this one, you know, or that one. You know, there may be some situations where there's a real mixture of different things. Like if I'm kind of distracted and not wanting to stay present, there may well be an element of pushing away experience there as well. But it may just for convenience seem more like a distraction thing than a resistance thing. There may be less an energy of like directly pushing away or getting angry or resisting. It may be more like a spacing out thing. But I see them as very much kind of very related to each other, but I think they can be useful ways of categories, really, for looking at different parts of our experience. And I do think that it's very wise to focus on what is doable, you know, what not to try to do everything, but to focus on something of like, okay, this is, and we'll explore this in, you know, in the next period before lunch and probably a little after lunch as well. You know, what would it be helpful to pay attention to? What would be helpful to work with that is kind of discreet enough, separate enough, that's kind of like, okay, doable enough as well? Because if we're going to take on, you know, a whole range of different habits and patterns in our life, it's going to be really difficult. What can happen, though, is if we focus on one thing, then often there can be side benefits in other areas. Research has shown if you focus on, you know, if people who, you know, might their habit that they're wanting to develop is, you know, to live in a healthy way through exercising, you know, they've often found that there's other side benefits of being more attentive and more present and more engaged that come out of that, even though it's not directly linked to, say, exercising, that there are side benefits that kind of come, that things are related to each other in the brain, you know. But very, very helpful to focus on, you know, on a particular area that is doable, and to kind of and work on that, you know, for a period. And, you know, if that works out, then maybe to expand to another area. Maybe we can talk more about that and get more into specifics, you know, as we move ahead. Okay, thank you.
I think for me, and maybe for others, there's a cumulative effect of not doing the habits we want to do. Like, say, you know, get up earlier, an hour earlier in the day so you can accomplishes, you know, exercise, for example. And when you don't do, say, your non-urgent things, the things that you want to be doing with your time tend to start building up, and the list starts to grow instead of shrink, and that you end up just feeling overwhelmed and not doing any of them. And I think that's kind of the issue, maybe for other people, but certainly for me.
Sorry, say again.
I think that's the issue for me, is that these are non-urgent habits that are things that I'd rather be doing with my time than, checking my phone every 10 minutes or whatever the case might be. And that's the issue for me anyway, is that the non-urgent things start to pile up.
Yeah.
And I think that's related to the last point.
Yeah. Yeah. And so really taking some time to think about what is important, and we'll do a practice around this in a little bit, about like how do we, in order to change something, it has to be important enough, you know. We have to see that there's a price that we're paying, and that we don't want to keep paying that price, and so that we're willing to make some effort to make change. And I think exploring that, because if it's not important enough, then, you know, it's not going to happen. It's going to be like, oh yeah, doesn't really matter that much, you know. So that's the quality of intention that we'll be getting into in a few minutes after we take a break. So what I'd like to do, maybe we'll take 10 minutes or so just to kind of take a pause. And then when we come back, I'll talk about the importance of intention, and we'll do some practices and explore kind of identifying, you know, what are some of our deepest wishes for ourselves and the things that get in the way. You know, what are obstacles? Habits that maybe would be helpful to change. So that's what we'll do after the break.